And we're back.
Welcome to No Direction Beyond, your Starfinder's news, reviews, and interviews podcast. I'm Alexander Agunis, a No Direction's everyman gamer, and I'm joined, as always, by the most intrepid Starfinder this side of the universe, James.
I'm James. I used to write Code Switch.
All right, so here we are. It's November. Starfinder 2nd Edition has been out for, oh my gosh, it's been 3 months, James.
Yeah, it felt like longer.
It's felt like longer, indeed. But hey, we're here now. And so we've currently looked at the core rule book. We've looked at the Alien Archive. We've looked at the GM core. Mm-hmm. And I guess that just kind of leaves the new adventures that are up. And this week, we're going to be taking a look at both of them. So Starfinder 2nd Edition has launched with a couple different options for people who want pre-written adventures. Obviously, the most... streamlined would be if you wanted to go and get like some of the really cool Starfinder Society scenarios, really bright, small bite spot sized adventures that you can kind of play with anyone, anywhere. James and I are both big fans of organized play, but those aren't what we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah, it's also hard to go over organized play scenarios without spoiling things.
It's hard to do what we're going to do today without spoiling things too, because today we're going to go over the new 3-volume equivalent adventure path, Guilt of the Grave World, as well as the new boxed adventure, which is called Murder in Metal City.
That's a good one to start. And then also after that, we have the Guilt of the Grave World also coming out. And for a lot of vegan chat, I don't believe anybody's finished it. I still haven't finished the initial playtest adventure. we're doing a session this week.
Yeah, I have not finished it yet either, but we have taken a look at it. So we're going to give you like a spoiler free rundown. James and I in general don't really like spoiling adventures here on No Direction Beyond. That seems counterproductive. If we're trying to draw your attention to something cool, telling you about what happens so you don't have to play it seems bad.
Yeah, and also like you would lose any context that we would, you know. Yeah. There's other stuff around it even, but I think there's enough in these books to go over that's also why you have two of them that will at least make it seem, give you a better idea if it's something you want to continue into.
Yeah, absolutely. That's kind of what we're hoping to give you. We're giving you the overview. If you've never opened a Starfinder 2nd Edition product before, or gosh, even a honestly, a Paizo adventure, this will be a good episode for you. And if you have, we're going to do our best to tell you some of the cool stuff that's in here that is not a spoiler. We're not going to be going over encounters. We're not going to be going over like deep into NPC backstories, but we are going to be like taking a look at this adventure. So let's hop to it, James. What do you want to start with? Guilt World, Girl, or Metal?
Let's start with Guilt of the Grave World, because Metal City, I think, is going to take a little bit longer.
Yeah, I think it is too. Guilt of the Grave World. This wonderful little book, I am holding it up here on screen if you're watching live. James also is probably putting a picture up on our feed if you're watching it via YouTube. But Guilt of the Grave World is a adventure that currently sits at a relatively strong 180 to 128 pages, which is a good length for an adventure. I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but back in the day, James, but most of the like original paper AP volumes typically were like 60-ish pages, yeah?
Yeah, they're around 60 of content.
Yeah, and so, like, there's a lot of pages that you do not need if you are putting everything in one book. So what I'd like to say about this is Guilt of the Grave World, based on a very kind of simple read-through of it, it is approximately, like, maybe 1 to 2 adventure volumes of an adventure. You start at level 1, and you get to 5th level by the end of it.
Yeah, it does split it up into 5 parts, but yeah. Some of the parts are very dense. Because of how stat blocks work for 2nd edition, they're a lot more condensed. So yes. As I was going through and doing my reread, I'm like, oh, this one encounter is actually like 3 encounters that they just give you some guidance to roleplay between. So it is a dense book.
Very dense. I agree with that completely. I'm not sure how I feel about the length of this adventure. 5 levels seems kind of short to me, but like also James and I are currently in an adventure that's probably going to level 20, and that happens a lot with this group of friends that we're in. So I don't know. Maybe that's just me. You can decide for yourself if 5 levels is a good adventure length.
Yeah, I mean, especially for a lower level adventure, I think it's fine. Like, it's enough that you can figure out what your character is doing and you can see where they can end up. Guessing if they do anything like how they did with the last edition, you'll have some stuff that starts at maybe 6th level or 5th level in the future.
Chat is currently talking about like how long it takes to play this, and some people are like, oh, like a month in adventure, and someone's like, at my play groups, right, it takes much longer. And I think that like how long the adventure is going to take your play group is not necessarily a good metric of like determining the value of the content. It's more like, just, is this fun? You know, how many hours are you going to get out of it? It's 128 pages, it's 5 levels. You know, if you go by an average of like, you know, a minimum of 5 encounters per level, you're probably looking at like 25-ish encounter things that are happening. It's a decent length book. And I think that's actually shortballing it. I think the official number is closer to 10 encounters per level, but yeah, it's a good book, you know, like in terms of its length. So let's talk briefly about what this venture is about. So essentially the core is that this book takes place on Eox, which, if you are a fan of Starfinder and you've been a fan for a while, you are aware that this planet is essentially an undead planet in the Pact Worlds, right? Mm-hmm. Now, basically, you take a job going into a dwarven mining thing. I'm just reading this off of the back right now. And it kind of pulls you into this adventure where you learn a lot about the past of Eox. James and I have read through some of the story. We haven't gone too far in depth in case we end up playing it at some point, but there's some major lore bombs about Eox as a planet, both in terms of its place in Starfinder as well as its place in Pathfinder. As you know, most of the stuff in the Pack Worlds exists in both editions of this universe, you know, the Pathfinder in the past and Starfinder in the future. Yeah. And I can't go too much into it, but this book is kind of, what if we gave you Zoe's adventure path, Zoe's background in a book? I think it's a good way of putting it.
Yeah. You learn a lot about Alibrians. In fact, there's stat blocks for Alibrians. In the back.
We'll talk more about that later, about the player facing content. Mm-hmm. Wink, wink, nudge.
Yeah.
As we progress.
Yeah. So, but the beginning is a lot of like figuring stuff out in Deep Rock Galactic style stuff. And as you move on into more Zoe focused things, and if you're familiar with Zoe at all from the Pack Worlds, you know he runs game shows.
Yeah. Those of you who have played in the playtest will know that Zoe is the personality behind the Wheel of Monsters, which is a Starfinder Society scenario written by Dustin Knight, in that you basically get put on a spin wheel and have to fight random things in order to win fabulous prizes for the Starfinder Society. Zoe has been a character who has appeared in many Starfinder Society adventure paths, and he is like a background part of many different adventures in Starfinder and in their campaign setting. Mm-hmm. I would say the most famous thing in first edition that he is best known for that got carried into second edition is that there was a planet on the planet Triaxis, which is like one of the planets in the Pack Worlds that's like always in winter because it's tidally locked. So, and it's very far away from the sun. So it's very cold, and then it gets closer, it gets very hot, and then it gets very cold again. Zoe did not like that planet, that their culture, those people had the same name as him. So he sued them for ownership of the name. And at the end of it, he opened it up to his like contestants, like all of his viewers at home, to vote for the new name of the planet. Mm-hmm. And the one that won was City McCity Face.
When will they learn?
Yeah, and so canonically, there is a planet in the system called City McCity Face, and that was not guaranteed. The Starfinder Society player base had to vote on what the name of the city would be, and that was one of the options. And obviously, the Starfinder Society player base did not let us down, and they did the funniest thing possible.
Yeah. It's just why they don't let open votes anymore in real life things, because they will always pick the silly name.
The stupid thing. We're not going to go a whole lot into like specifics of the encounters or the antagonists or anything like that in this book. But what we will say is that if you are someone who likes player-facing content, there is player-facing content in this book. Like many modern adventure paths, there is an adventurer's toolbox in the back.
Mm-hmm. Also, there isn't starship combat per se.
Yes, there's no Starship Combat in this book, which makes sense because the Starship Combat rules won't be out until August next year at mm-hmm. the Tech Core book.
Yeah, so, I do say per se, there is Starship Combat, but there's no tactical Starship Combat.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's like, it uses a lot of the narrative version, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, James, that was in GM Core, wasn't it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it uses the GM Core rules for narrative Starship Combat. If you like narrative Starship Combat, great. If you don't, probably just skip it. It's fine.
Yeah, I mean, it's unobtrusive in how it's presented, so going through it ain't going to be a big deal.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm getting a call from Paizo. They're telling me that they will send the Paizertons after you if you don't play the Starship Combat correctly, just so that you know.
I mean, yeah, they need data on it, right?
They need data. Give them the datas.
Give them your data.
That sounds horrifying in the modern context of that phrase.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, anyway, but before you give all of your data up to Paizo, which you probably shouldn't do that, let's talk a bit about some of the cool content that you can get if you are a player or a GM, James.
I mean, the biggest one is new species, right?
Absolutely, I think. There are two in this book. Believe it or not, there are two ancestries in this book. It's wild.
I keep calling them species.
Yeah, I mean, I like species better. It sounds more scientific for a future setting. They are the people that the Necrovites, aka the dead people of Eox, were before they died. Like, they're the living ones.
Yay. I'm trying to bring up a picture, sorry.
Yeah. They're, well, I guess Cryptwalker in chat is saying that, like, corpse folk, I guess corpse folk is technically a versatile heritage. That's true. Like, I don't know. They give it a lot of lore. There's like a 2-page spread. We'll get to that in a second. So technically, you're right. It is one ancestry, one versatile heritage. I'm going to explain why I said it's basically two in a moment. But if you're looking to play an Alibrian that has the full array of feats, one of the things that's really interesting about the Alibrians that if you read it, most of their feats are references to like actors and showmanship and like musical theater and stuff. And without going into information that is part of the adventure, one of the things that their entry says that if you're going to play them is that most of the Alibians that are alive today are in this place called the Halls of the Living on Eox, where they are essentially living entertainment for the dead of the corpse folk who live like in proper society above. It's horrifying. Congratulations.
Yeah, it's kind of creepy, but you know, you're alive, I guess.
Yeah, and then you die, and then you can properly join the rest of Eox. Oh, that's even worse. So they have like they have this really unsettling mix of like showmanship feats and like feats that reference musical theater and like being a performer, and like they have like an encore reaction and stuff like that, which is pretty cool. I like the encore reaction specifically. Mm-hmm. When you trigger encore, it's actually one of your 17th level feat choices. It says you constantly rehearse your best bits, so you're always ready for an encore. The next action you take can be an ability with a frequency of once per day that you've used only once per day. So basically, you can use any ability that is a once per day ability again once, which is pretty cool. Like, it's your encore. I like that. But then like you have those like very showmansy ones, and then there's a couple just mixed in that like reference the fact that like the Necrovites are all dead Eoxians, and it's like, you want to be a Necrovite too, don't you? Don't you, buddy?
You want to join us?
Yeah, and just so that we're aware, like Necrovites are essentially liches. They're Starfinder liches.
Yep.
So like one of them even references you have a type of high tech soul cage for yourself as part of gaining that feat. So enjoy. One of the things that's interesting is that the word soul cage is a soul cage is italicized, which typically happens for magic spells and magic items. And I looked through this book, and the soul cage is not an item that is in this book. I haven't checked the core rule book if it's in there, or like maybe the alien archive to see if it's in the alien archive entry. But there's no like reference to where I would reference what a soul cage is, which I know that is a lich's phylactery, but it's just interesting that I couldn't find that. But I think that's a very small deal. I think it's supposed to be just flavor, but eh. Yeah. Now
I just Googled it real quick, and I think it is italicized because it should be there, because you can find it for 2e.
Oh, is it in the Starfinder player core?
No, it is in Book of the Dead.
Oh, it's in Book of the Dead for Pathfinder.
Yeah.
Okay, so that should definitely say go reference this other game's item.
Yeah, I think maybe just maybe got just caught because it's something that exists there, and they just maybe we're also missing just another example of it. But quick Google.
That is interesting. I if I had to guess anywhere, I'd say it's probably in Alien Core. I have the book right here. I kind of want to know now, because like if you're gonna put the Necrophytes in, watch me just pull my book out of the green screen. You love it, right everybody watching live. I feel like if you're gonna put it anywhere in Starfinder, you put it in the rules for the things that typically use it, you know what I'm saying?
True. And Anchor 89 says Stolen Fate has a lich with a soul cage in PF2. That would track.
Yeah, definitely.
There's also a species feat called Leading Role, which allows you to substitute perform for any other skill check once an hour, and I think that's awesome.
And just dumb. Are there not Necrophytes in this book? Am I just dumb?
You okay? You okay, no, buddy?
The brain is very. Oh, here we go. I got thrown off by nymph and like how many weird spell. Here we go. Soul cage. No, the soul cage is not an item that appears in the Necrovite entry. Huh. Okay, well, that didn't help me.
Well, that's too bad. You just gotta learn,
I guess. Enjoy. Yeah, but you know, we won't dwell on that for very long, because I don't think that that's a big deal.
No,
I just thought it was interesting. No. Yeah. Regardless, like I mentioned to Crypt Walker in chat, yes, there the corpse folk, the other option in this book, is technically a universal heritage, but like you've got two entire pages on what it means to be a corpse folk, and like it's written with the same like style as being a separate ancestry. You get a lot for being a corpse folk. The big one is that you get the corpse folk and undead traits, low light vision or dark vision if your ancestry normally has low light vision. You can also pick corpse folk feats and feats from your ancestry whenever you gain an ancestry feat. So like you could pick a corpse folk feat instead of a human feat or whatever. And you also gain immunity to death effects. So effects that automatically kill you or increase your dying value do not work on you, but any other part of the spell works normally. You are damaged by vitality damage and aren't healed by vitality healing. You don't take void damage and are healed by void effects. You aren't destroyed when reduced to zero hit points. Instead, like you knock out and begin dying. So basically you don't automatically die like a regular undead would. And at the GM's description, you can select the corpse folk heritage after first level if you die and have an opportunity to be raised as the undead, replacing your existing heritage.
Oh, that's sick. That's sick.
Yeah. Yeah, that is cool. We do like that here in this chat.
I mean, that's just a cool option.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is different than like the Prismeni, because like a Prismeni, at least in my mind, is you're an X, but also Y. Whereas when you are a shambling corpse, I think you are a shambling corpse.
Yeah. Anchor 89, I know that the soul cage is a swap for what a phylactery was originally, and it was changed from the OGL issue with Wizards of the Coast. I am saying that like it's italicized like a magic item, but isn't properly referenced. It's a little bit different. But regardless of that, there's like three lineages you can pick at first level to talk about what kind of undead you are, which is really cool. So like you could be a biting corpse folk where you just got chompers. Mm-hmm, you can be a partial corpse folk, which means like you're not entirely dead, you're just mostly dead.
You're just so edgy. I live on the brink of death.
And you could also be a shambling corpse folk where like you look like a mindless zombie. Like the picture of the art is like this Yosoki with like this comically massive shambling arm that has to drag behind it. It's very funny.
Yeah, encephalitis.
I like encephalitis Yosoki. And then you have a lot of really cool abilities for the corpse folk. You have like abilities that let you like stabilize because like you're like on the verge of death, I guess, like as like the cantrip. Mm-hmm. Lots of abilities. Your eyes burn with a red hue and glow like embers in areas of darkness or shade. You gain dark vision, but your eyes are just constantly glowing red. Oh, that's just cool. There's stuff like dead nerves, being a hulking corpse folk, meaning that like you are now a large undead instead of whatever you were. It's very funny because it doesn't say increase your size by one category. It just says make you large. And that means you could be a small Yosoki and go to large and be a large Yosoki. It's very funny. I appreciate that.
And then if you're large, you're just large.
That's true. If you're large, this feat literally does nothing to you. But well, it does say it increase your size carried to large and increase your reach by 5 feet, not to 10 feet. So maybe if you're already large, you actually have a 15-foot reach. I don't know. This feat may want to be looked at because it's a little bit wonky.
A lot of things say it's worded like how a large person is worded, the spell.
Oh, interesting. So it just does nothing if you're already large and you're like a dragon folk, which is a an ancestry that came out in literally the first adventure.
I haven't read in large person. Magic is for nerds.
Magic is for nerds. I'm a nerd. I'm a holy nerd.
Also, consume flesh is just an ability you can get.
Yeah. Have you ever wanted to rip tear people?
All the time.
Yeah. There's also a funny one where you could just get an ability where, like, I don't want to be turned undead and controlled. I am uncontrollable. It's very fun. And then, of course, there's also some really cool monsters. I know there was one you wanted to talk about, James.
I don't know if there's so much wanted to talk about. I just saw it and went, oh, this looks like it could be an ancestry, and then it was not.
Yeah. Oh, you mean the faceless?
Yes, the faceless. It's, the presentation comes very quickly, and you're like, oh, that could just be like a thing that you turn into or something. Yeah. And it's a monster. It's cool. It's cool.
I like the name Rigor Mortic as an undead. That's fun.
Yeah, the faceless, I'm just going to put up a picture of it like real quick. They just look cool. They're scary kind of ghost dudes.
I also like that there is a Yosoki Union rep with cowboy spurs for on their boots.
Which one was that? What page was that? Where's that? Oh, yeah, I see it.
Yeah, it's Jazzy. Jazzy's cool. We like Jazzy in this house. There's a lot of, and it's funny because like the gallery does not give them a stat block. It gives them like a influence challenge stat block to like make them your friend. Mm-hmm. So if you want to kill them, you're out of luck. There's no stats for them, though. That means they're gods.
Yeah. And as with every Paizo Adventure Path, the art or Paizo product, the art is great. Just consistently great all the way through.
Yeah. Were you expecting the 19th level character in this adventure?
I was not.
Yeah. No spoilers. Somebody gets a stat block who you're not expecting to have a stat block that says they're a 19th level character.
Yeah, it's different than what I'd expect.
Yes. No spoilers, though. We don't do spoilers here in the house, except the fact that there's a 19th level stat block in this book. Hopefully you do not piss this person off and they do not decide to kill you. Because according to their lore, they're responsible for many deaths. You've read that lore, right?
Yeah, and then there's also magic items as well.
Yes.
A couple, including a bobblehead.
A bobblehead, a zobblehead, you could say.
Yeah, very, very funny. I would get one. Also, teeth. Just free. Yeah. They're teeth. They're not free, but you know.
They're magic dentures. Enjoy. Have you ever wanted a pair of magic dentures? Have you ever said to yourself, what would magic dentures do for me? I don't need to know that. I just need to know that they exist. Mm-hmm. Then they're for you. You can get them. But yeah, like James says, the art is very good in this book. There's also a picture of the witch, iconic witch warper, but undead.
Oh, yeah.
That's on page 102.
I saw that and just forgot what page it was on.
Did you see that there's POW ammunition where you put the bullet in your gun and you shoot it at somebody and it like pops out the flag that faints them?
Mm-hmm.
It's very funny.
There we go.
So someone who wrote these items has a good sense of humor. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that.
A lot of it is puns, and it's going to make some people groan, but I think they're very appropriate for the adventure path.
Yeah. Anything else you want to talk about when it comes to murder or in Guilt of the Grave World? Sorry, guilt and graves and murder and metal, and it's all in my head.
No, I think we went through it pretty well.
Cool. All right. Let's talk about the second a super deluxe adventure that you can get for Starfinder 2nd Edition. This one is called Murder in Metal City. I've got the box here on screen if you're watching on like YouTube or watching us live on Twitch. It is a box. Look at this box. You get the whole box when you buy this. Now, I'm going to show you a little bit about what it looks like when you open this box. I know that there's been a lot of negative talk on Reddit because when you open this box, I do not have mine fully set up. I already took mine out, but basically you have like this little cardboard tray that props the rest of it up, and the rest of it is kind of just empty space.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of stuff in here. Now, there's a lot of people online who are mad that this box is mostly empty. I think those people underestimate the fact that my box needs to be able to hold dice in my core rulebook if I'm bringing this to a convention. Like, you could buy, like, obviously you're not going to put, like, the full size book here. Well, actually, you actually almost can. Like, this is my Alien Core. Like, it fits in here fine. I don't think that the core rulebook would fit in here, and this is even straining just from it being here. But if you went out and you bought the Pocket Edition core rule, player core for and put it in here, you could, or the Pocket Edition GM core. I think having a little bit of extra space is not a problem in a box that is supposed to be a beginner's, like, everything Starfinder in one place. So I don't hate that. Now, if I want to show you some of the stuff in here, the adventure itself is it kind of looks like one of the paper books that we are used to seeing for an Adventure Path volume. It looks like this. It's good size. This one in particular is 64 pages, so it is a, like we were talking about, a traditional Adventure Path module length. That is about this one. The fact that they took a level one adventure and made it 64 pages of content impresses me, to be completely honest with you. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that I like about this book is that it has pawns, sort of. They are a punch-out sheet that looks like this. And so every monster that appears on the adventure is, like, on these little pogs. They're all, like, small or medium creatures, it looks like. There's nothing large, and that seems very smart to me if you're going to, you know, put all of them on punch-out pogs that you can use. Mm-hmm. But this means you can just punch out the token and, like, put it on the map. And there you go. There's your little dude. Is it a 3D, like, standee mini? No, but I think this is more practical for storage in a box like this and also less prone to breaking, which is good. There's also in here, you can get, I'm not going to show you the maps because, again, James and I don't do spoilers on these types of shows, but most of the big encounter maps have this really nice, it's not, I wouldn't call it like a flip mat because the flip mats were like laminated poster board, James, mm-hmm. but this is like almost like the plastic material that they would make posters out of in like a Lost Omens book, like the poster of Galarian. It's okay. Kind of what this looks and feels like. And they're also, all of the handouts for like the murder mystery in this book are labeled on one side, and then the handout is on the other. So they're pre-made handouts for you. I thought that was really cool.
I love that.
I legitimately love that too. And it seems like there are ones for every handout in here. Like it goes up to handout 20, mm-hmm. which I appreciate. There's also a whole bunch of these little like booklets. So like there are cards that have the name of the character and then a picture of what they look like on the back, the mm-hmm. art from the book. Looks like it goes not only like the named NPCs, but also like the major monsters get one too, it looks like. So it's pretty cool. There's a couple of them that have question marks on them, so I'm not going to show you those because I am, again, not going to do spoilers. But there's a lot in this box, and it's like someone went and they made you every possible handout you could need. Also, a bunch of the items have like a picture of the item on the front, and then on the back is the stat block for that item from the core rulebook.
I want that. I just want to give that to players. I just want that.
Yeah, like this one says Chem Analyzer. There's Silent Starfall Pistol, Infiltrator Serum, Smoke Grenades. Smoke Grenades are really funny. They've got like a picture of like the bomb, and it's got like little emoji stickers on them. They're very cute. I like that. Mm-hmm. And then the last thing in this box, there are character sheets in here. They're this really nice style. I've never seen this style of character sheet before. All the ones that I have here, they are pre-made characters. None of these sheets that I am holding are they're not for you to fill in.
They're essentially not blank.
Yeah, exactly. There's also like a whole bunch of like player profiles where you can write information about the player characters on the back, and like notes like their language, their name, their pronouns, their ancestry, background, class, senses. There's a list of important NPCs, and like the list, the page on the book where their stat block shows up in. This is incredible. There's an evidence tracker because the book, it's called Murder in Metal City. It's a murder mystery. Surprise, I just spoiled the most important part of the adventure for you. But there's like a checklist of all the different like evidence the players could find. The page that evidence is collected on in the adventure, and a checkbox to check it. There's a page of GM notes, items and treasure, an XP tracker. It's basically a GM cheat sheet. It kind of looks like one of the spreadsheets that James and my friend would probably make in trying to do this. It's very good. It's very thorough.
So Lava being in chat asks, are they standard map size or larger, or what are the dimensions like? There we go.
Standard.
Pretty standard. Okay.
Yeah, they are standard. That was a spoiler. I'm so sorry, everybody. I failed you. I opened the map on screen. I hopefully there wasn't anything like terrible on it, like a giant picture of who the antagonist was.
No. Also, I don't think they're available for purchase separately, but if you do get the PDF, they do have them on the PDF.
Yeah. So if you buy the PDF, all of these, I think all of these handouts are like part of that. Like the PDFs are on them, right?
Yeah.
I think the only thing you might not be able to get, are the tokens, like punch out ones too? Mm-hmm. Wow. That's incredible. So if you buy this as a PDF, you could just make your own stuff. That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Lava Being says the green screen hid the secrets. Good. Yeah. That's what the green screen is for. It hides what my room looks like back here because it's a mess. And it also apparently hides the lore. Good stuff. Speaking of the lore, this adventure is surprisingly in depth for a level one adventure is all I'll say about it.
Yeah, and there's a lot of non-combat encounters.
Yes. One thing I'll say is that this adventure assumes that if you are buying this box that you have never played Starfinder before. Mm-hmm. And I think that is probably a strength of this thing.
That's smart. That's smart to do.
Like there's a whole sidebar of like all the different tools that they give you and how it goes. The one thing it does say is that you do need, and this is not a beginner's box, let me put it this way. There is not a little book in here that tells you how to play the game. And this is not like the Pathfinder first edition, second edition beginner box where you essentially like have a simplified version of the game. This is just Starfinder, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like it is Starfinder. You probably need to buy the core rule book, the player core in order to play this game. And I don't think the GM core is necessary, but it probably wouldn't hurt. I think you definitely need a player core to play this box, though. So if you don't have a player core, get like the cheapy little floppy one. It's good stuff. I don't want to talk a whole lot about this adventure because it's a murder mystery. And the more that I say about it, the less you're going to enjoy it. Because at a glance, I would say that this adventure is kind of like, James, what's a movie or game where if once you know an anime, once you know the Full Metal Alchemist, it's like Full Metal Alchemist, where like part of the fun is not knowing the story, and once you know the story, the anime kind of loses a lot of its charm.
Yeah, I get you.
So I would recommend I'm not going to tell you much about what is going on here. And honestly, I didn't read a whole lot of it because if you tell me that I have a murder mystery, I'm not going to read this until I know that I am running it and I'm not, or like someone is running it for me. That is just me personally. One thing I will say is that, I guess everybody does have to buy this though, because it has a new ancestry in it.
Also, it has stuff about deities, which is separate from the other stuff that we've gotten for deities.
Yeah, weird.
Another weird smattering of here are some edicts, anathema, and then like a couple paragraphs. And I don't think they're exactly copy pasted from the last place that put that limited description.
Well, it's not, because a lot of the there's like one paragraph that is like the basics about the deity, and then the second paragraph is about how that deity appears in the city that this takes place in, which I don't remember the name of the city off the top of my head, but it's one of the ones on
Avalon.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it tells about how they relate to that. So it's like, yeah, we get more decentralized deity knowledge.
The adventure is called Striving. It's like a mega city complex on Avalon, which is cool. I'm interested by that. There's also like a lot of fun monsters that I'm not going to read to you because they would be spoilers for the mystery adventure, but they are very cool. There's a monster in here that its wings are covered in eyes, and I love that. Give me biblically accurate horrors. And it's not an angel. It's just a dude that his wings are covered in eyes for some reason.
That sounds terrible.
Yeah. There's also like a monster type that James really loves like a lot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know which ones I'm talking about, right?
Yep.
I do. Yeah. And I'm seeing that they're in here makes me wonder why they're in this adventure. And I kind of like that fact that, huh, what are you guys doing here, you jerks? Nobody likes you. Go back to your star system.
Mm-hmm.
But I mentioned before, there is a new species in this book. James and I have kind of skipped around on it. That species is the Khazar.
Yay, I love the Khazar, although they're kind of like the Raxalites, sort of, but big.
Yeah. Well, they also don't really have heads. The Raxalites have heads.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Khazar are intelligent plants that live in harmony with nature and have learned to communicate telepathically with other creatures. They basically have glowing bulbs for heads, which is funny. So they have to use their telepathic powers to communicate. They're pretty good, honestly. They get con and wisdom as boosts. They get a dexterity flaw. They have 8 hit points, like most things. They're medium. They have common their own language and normal languages, essentially. They're plants. Enjoy. You could be a plant.
With everything that entails.
Yeah. Not a whole lot. You have to have traits that give you a lot of the crazy parts of being plants, but they're mm-hmm. plants. Mm-hmm. They also have limited telepathy, and they have an ability called Verdant, which this is their plant ability. They get a +1 circumstance bonus to saves against mental effects, paralysis, poison, and sleep. They don't need to eat, drink, or sleep if they have been exposed to natural sunlight for at least 4 hours per day. If they haven't, they have to eat like Venus flytraps.
Nom, nom, nom.
I don't know if that's true. That's my lore as to how a plant eats. It's just a Venus flytrap. there is more about the lore of what a Khazar is in these two pages than ever existed in Starfinder First Edition.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. One of the things I like about the ancestry system in Second Edition is that in addition to getting the 2-page spread that gives you a good chunk of lore about them, mm-hmm. Including like their general like thoughts, beliefs, and cultures, mm-hmm. they also have like every single heritage and feat option is designed to tell a story about what that ancestry is like, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like a good example is like we know that Khazar can be deadwoods, which means they are rotting from the inside. So that means that's not good.
Just like me, for rotting. Real, for real.
Just like me, for real, all caps, straight bussin'. petrified, they can be like, their body is covered in bark. Cool, I didn't know that. That wasn't in first edition. They just looked like they were like dandelions.
Yeah.
And then they have like inflorescent, where like they have a constant welling of energy, so they're always blooming, which is pretty cool. And you could also be a wild seed. You have like lots of really cool feats and other abilities. One of them, I made the joke about them being Venus flytraps, but there's literally a feat called Carrion Feeder. Just eat it. And now that tells you for sure, oh, Alex is right. When they eat, they do just mulch things. Okay. Now, what about you, James? Did you see any options for the Khazar that you saw that and you were like, this is neat. I would like this.
I just love playing races, species that like have weird ways to perceive the world.
Yeah.
Because it just makes it funny when you have to explain how you notice things.
Yes.
That's kind of my more thing. Like, their abilities are cool, I guess. They definitely fit, and they make you a plant plant creature. But I think the more fun is just being a sapient plant creature without a face to emote at things.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess seed pod surveillance, where you just throw down a seed and you get to kind of scry from there.
Yeah, that's very funny. I am a big fan of, first of all, that art on page 60 where the Khazar has like a headset on. That's great. I didn't know I needed to know that they have some kind of like ocular ear organ that makes like headsets necessary. And also, I guess that headset must be able to transmit like telepathy, which is wild. I need to know more about this personally.
That just makes me feel bad because that one's on hold with Comcast probably. That thing's going to be there forever.
No, you don't understand. But that computer it's holding, it is Comcast. It's putting someone else on hold.
Oh, no, it's evil.
It's the capitalism plant.
No, can we stop it? I'm tired of capitalism plant.
I also like, you know how like in the real world, if you have a tree and you put something in its way and of its trunk will just split around it?
Mm-hmm.
They have that as a heritage feat called multi-stemmed.
Oh.
Yeah, it says your body has two primary trunks, one of which is diverged in nature from the other. Choose one Khazar heritage that you don't already have. You gain that heritage.
And so that's more like grafting.
Yeah, that's actually kind of wild as an ability. There are not many things that say you get multiple heritages, because heritages tend to be better than like a first level feat by like a lot, because they usually give you something on par with a first level feat.
And the ability to take the other stuff later.
Yeah, definitely. I also like the seedling reincarnation 17th level ability. I like reincarnation when I get to opt into it and not when somebody else forces it on me.
Too bad. And,
and so this is when you die, a seed sprouts from your body. This seedling is a copy of you lacking any of your memories. though it has a vague memories of your relationships and may feel fond of your allies or distrustful of your enemy. It grows into a miniature version of you over 1d6 weeks with the same attributes and abilities, but small instead of medium. And over 1d6 months, it grows to your original size. A new seedling germinates you over 10 years. If you die before then, the seedling dies too. I love that. That is a 17th level feat to reincarnate yourself for free once. That is great.
Well, once, right?
Once for 10 years.
Yeah, once for 10 years, not once per day.
I would love to see like some kind of ability that like actively lets you refresh that. I love that. You can ask Dustin sometimes, like the slow burn reincarnation is my favorite reincarnation. It's an exact copy of you. I love that. Just make it take forever. Make me wait and suffer.
Great. Oh, well, I love it. You would be really into the spell clone then.
I mean, yeah, kind of. Mm-hmm. Why don't I play arcane spellcasters in our games again?
Because you're afraid of spellbooks.
I am afraid of spell books. Give me spell slots, please. I don't want to have to spend 10,000 gold on a blessed book. Give me my just whatever my genes or my god or whatever says that I have. That's fine.
I think your problem with it was having a limited spell selection.
I don't mind having a limited spell selection. My secret on my cleric, I prepare almost the same list every day, unless there's an obvious problem that takes multiple days to solve, and then I'll change it.
Yeah, but it's different when it's a book that you're locked into and you need to pay for those things separately. You can't just change them. So you need to have all of them for that one off. I've seen you do this. I've seen you do this. I know.
No. Don't call out how I use items, James. Why would you do this?
Just give in to the suck. Just deal with me. We're going to solve all the problems with Fireball because that's all I have.
James says this as a man who will willingly take the most niche spells that don't have normal practical uses ever on his characters and find ways to use them just because he's going to force them to his choices to matter.
I mean, locate portal, read weather.
I was going to say instant portrait.
These are forever. I'm an oracle. These are my forever spells.
My favorite part is when you made the GM read track ship.
I make Mike read things all the time. I was looking at other spells for when I go higher level. I was just like, I need to find something stupid. And I think I found it. There's a spell that allows you to put items onto a blanket, and then the blanket becomes
a tapestry. Right?
Yeah, that one. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That one's actually very good when you're dealing with stealing a dragon sword.
Yeah, or when you have a ship that you can sew these things into, and just looks like part of the sails.
I have to admit, everybody listening, I'm not blameless in this either. I don't know if you saw Mike's face, James, when I explained to him that no summon ship did not limit the number of ships I could summon at the same time.
Because that does seem weird. But also, I don't think anybody, when they wrote that spell, expected somebody to summon Armada.
No, it's fine. I just needed two.
Yeah, we got two, and you know we got them back.
Yeah, it was very good. The best part was our patron going like, you can just summon a ship whenever you want.
I mean
that, and then she goes, magic is BS.
Yeah.
And then I was like it only lasts for it's only a temporary ship, it doesn't last that long. And then she goes, how long does it last? And I was like, at my level, like 14 days. Oh, that's not a very long ship, as she said.
yeah, exactly. Like it's good for what we needed it for, but it, like those spells, now imagine if that was one of your only spells that you had.
I'm a cleric. I say, God, I need a boat, please. And she's like, all right, here you go. Have a toy ship, my son.
So we looked over everything, I think, in Metal City, Murder in Metal City. Shame we can't talk about it more, because once again, it is a mystery.
It is. It's a mystery to you now, too, because we won't tell you what the answer is.
There is also just a thing in the back of it about there is a GM reference. Yes. For it that goes over just like what to expect, which I think is maybe a little overkill for this adventure path, but some of it is immediately helpful, like what you roll for recall knowledge and stuff.
Yeah. So James, quick overview. If you were a brand new GM and you have never played a game like Starfinder before, which one do you think is the better game? Do you think you would recommend Murder in Metal City or Guilt of the Grave World?
That is a hard one, because I am stupid. So by giving me a murder mystery, you make me have to remember things.
It's true.
And I am kind of stupid, but it does have the better setup for other new players.
Yeah.
Like I think that is, if I was a new GM, I think I would go Grave Risen, but or Grave, I keep on saying
murder,
Grave Risen.
Murder Mystery, Murder in Metal City.
No, the other one.
Yeah.
But it,
Guilt
but
of the Grave World.
Guilt of the Grave World. But as somebody with some experience, I think I would do Murder in Metal City.
Yeah. So my thought is that Murder in Metal City has like everything in it, but Murder in Metal City, just like with all the stuff you have to remember. And like, it's a very lore heavy adventure. James mentioned this at one point, but like the adventure, most of the encounters are like role-playing encounters. Like you're trying to figure out who the murderer is, and every now and then you wander into a fight because of it. So like, I think that if you are somebody who is the type of person that likes a very long game where you have to do a lot of role-playing and that is your jam, you're going to like Murder in Metal City better, I think. And I think that if you are an experienced GM, Murder in Metal City is a better tool to show up at a friend's house and be like, yo, let's run this out of this box. I know how to run this. I'm going to teach you how to play. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that Murder in Metal City is less a tool for if everybody is new, and is more a tool for an experienced GM to teach new other play people. That is my opinion personally.
Yeah.
I think that if you need an adventure that is relatively straightforward because you are not comfortable GMing, I think Guilt of the Grave World is better. I think it is simpler. It is easier. It is a lot safer and more traditional.
Yeah. That one does kind of lead you around by the nose. No spoilers, but it tells you where to go and what to do.
Yes.
It's not your choice. You need to do this now.
Yeah, no, it is about as much of a railroad as a Paizo Adventure Path is railroaded. It reminds me of like kind of like the, I ran Strange Aeons. It kind of reminds me of Strange Aeons, but much shorter and with less tentacles.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of super rewarding ones. At least, I mean, I think this is a little bit more. I mean, these are Paizo Adventure Paths, so they are just like in general good quality. Like they're looking over it. There's very few things that I'm just like, this out and out seems silly or nonsensical. And most of the time, when I did find anything like that, it's because I didn't look two pages earlier because the formatting might have been a little bit.
As someone who's played 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons, if you were going to ask me what the best way to teach someone to play is, I think either of these products are better than anything D&D has. Sorry, Dungeons & Dragons, get good.
Yeah, I've seen some of the modules there, and they're it just feels like a lot of suggestions, and I'm sure that works for people. But it sounds demeaning to call it handholding, but the extra context that you get with the extra words you get from Paizo, I think, are helpful.
Yeah, Paizo is more about giving the GM tools to make a better experience, and the D&D thing just kind of tells you how to handhold your players through the adventure. I would say that this is much better than that. I honestly think that this is probably, I mean, I don't know if it's better than second edition's beginner box, but I think the fact that Murders in Metal City is a very different kind of adventure at least interests me more. Like, it doesn't feel like a cut and dry, like I've seen it before adventure. Does that make sense?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. So I think that that about wraps up everything I have to say about these two. What about you, James? What do you think?
Yeah, I think we looked over and kind of came to a head on which ones we would do.
Yeah,
eventually I will be done the starter game, and I do have people that want to play more, so.
Good. Yeah, no, I think that these are good adventures. Like James said, they're high quality. Paizo's art is literally second to none in the business. Their presentation is honed and crafted over 10 years plus of giving good adventures, and the content is strong. You know, it's a good look at Starfinder and some of the things that make Starfinder different and fun. Like, I think one of the things that captured James and I about Starfinder, and correct me if I'm wrong, James, or feel free to elaborate, is that like when we played Starfinder, it felt like Starfinder, whether on purpose or accidentally, was never afraid to not take itself seriously. And these adventure books do not take themselves seriously, but they are serious. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I would say so. They've always had a bit of tongue-in-cheek, but they do that abrupt switch into, oh, now everything matters. Also, Paizo's 23 years old.
Yeah, that sounds right.
As a company.
Yeah. Makes you feel old, doesn't it?
I'm tired of feeling old. Grandpa, my knees.
It's okay. Eventually, we'll just decay into dust.
I don't want to do
that. And then your knees won't hurt anymore.
True.
All right, but those are our thoughts on Murder and Metal Mystery and Murder and Metal City. Murder and Metal Mystery. Murder and Metal City. I'm sorry, I don't know if I mentioned this, but I was at PAX Unplugged on Saturday, and then after PAX Unplugged, I went and played 5 hours of Pathfinder, and then went home and played another like 3 or 4 hours of like Jumpstart Magic the Gathering. My brain is not all back yet, but ask me about PAX. It was really fun. I got to meet with a lot of Starfinder designers, and I got to hang out with Thirsty for a bit. We had a really fun lunch together. I got to meet tons of other Paizo freelancers that I haven't seen since, honestly, COVID. I haven't done a lot of conventions where everybody was coming together since COVID, and PAX Unplugged is finally big enough where it feels like a convention that like people come out to. And my favorite thing, James, you are never going to believe this, they fixed the queue.
Ooh, I like that.
So Philadelphia is really cool that we have a train station right under the convention center. So you can take the train in from like where I live or where James lives and like go to Jefferson Stage Terminal that way and then walk right up the terminal into the convention hall. But in the past, PAX like did not have their sorting system optimized. So you'd have to walk out of the terminal, go find the line. And that line usually wrapped around the building 2 or 3 times. Mm-hmm. And you'd have to wait in an hour long line going around this building for literally an hour and a half going up the stairs to get everything. But literally, I got off this train this time and I walked right up into the big room, and I walked right and did not have any line to pick up my badges. They took like maybe a minute to give it to me, and then I just walked right through the thing, and I got there like at a reasonable time. I got there at like 9 o'clock, and then I walked right in, and then I was able to stand there, James, and I waited for Tim, and I watched Tim do the same thing 5 minutes after I did it, so I knew it wasn't a fluke. It was great. It was great. That's so if PAX can keep up that again, I will attend every year. I had a blast this year. I like I said, I hung out with a bunch of Paizo people. I love going to these cons to shop. I spent way too much money on Magic the Gathering cards and then played lots of Magic and then did all sorts of fun stuff. So it was great. Had a wonderful time. Very tired, brain fried. Lots of Starfinder on the horizon. I'd say the Starfinder play section was still kind of small. Mm-hmm. I think it could be bigger, but also if you've ever been to Gen Con, this is not Gen Con.
Yeah.
It is much smaller, much mm-hmm. smaller, but very fun. Good time. So let's talk about next month, James. Next month is December. Mm-hmm. Currently, our plan is to do the episode on the 29th still, correct?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Doing it live. Looking at my calendar.
Yeah, doing it live, looking at the calendar. So our plan is to have our episode currently on the 29th. That is 2 days before the new year. It's the first Monday of the month of December, or the last Monday of the month of December, I should say. And that's the battle plan. I have Ryan putting out some feelers. I would like to get a Paizo designer on the show that hasn't been on the show before, because I like meeting new people and getting their take and hearing their stories.
Yeah,
I have a couple of different people in mind, but I've given a name that I have selected, and hopefully I will get to tell you all about them soon. Pretty cool. If not, I'm sure James and I will find something fun to do for that show in the new year. The final. I don't know, the last year where there was no Starfinder 2 for part of it. I don't know. We'll come up with something. We
always yeah, do. We'll figure it out.
But hey, if you want to hear up all the news and like when we're doing our shows and maybe who we end up picking for this, you should definitely hop onto our Discord. You can find a link to our Discord server at nodirectionpodcast.com. The site where I had come back and then life hit me with trying to help a friend with something very important and have not been able to do it, but my resolution is to go back to trying to do these articles again in January, now that things are finally going to be quieting down. In the meantime, while you wait for me to come back on No Direction Beyond or No Direction Podcast, you can hang out with us on Discord, because James and I, we're not like super chatty, but like when you pop in and you talk, James and I will usually pop in and give our opinions on stuff.
Yeah, I definitely read through stuff, and sometimes it's like, yep, you have a better formed opinion than I do.
yeah. If you have a better opinion than us, we typically will not fight you, because we're like, yeah, that's a good opinion. Good job. You put together a great opinion.
Yeah, you learn so much when you listen.
Uh-huh. Absolutely. Yeah. Speaking, I guess until next time when we can talk to you more and listen even more, we're going to go beyond with No Direction.